If people are dieting now more than ever before, then why are nearly 1 in 3 American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who's helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier than ever, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that, instead of turning into fat when you consume it, turns into ketones, which is a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body. So, by getting more MCTs in your diet, you essentially flip a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which can flush out excess fat and calories. And he's created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it's a delicious drink. I love how incredible it tastes. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized. So, if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, go to GundryMD.com/energy and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. Again, that's GundryMD.com/energy.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
Welcome back to another episode of Open Floor, our first of 2023. I'm Rohan Nautrani, joined today by my friend and colleague and sad Michigan Wolverine, Sports Illustrated senior writer, New York Times bestselling author, Chris Herring. Chris, how's it going?
I'm good. I got engaged over this holiday break, and yeah, the first test of love, if you want to call it that, or like true love, came about 12 hours after I proposed, when Michigan was losing that game. And as me and my fiance now were sitting and going through the engagement photos, I had to leave, you know, a TV screen with Michigan behind by one touchdown to TCU. And she's like, I know you're not serious right now, looking at like the ESPN app as going through engagement photos. And then not just that, but then me essentially throwing my phone after Michigan lost that game, which was infuriating. But let me not spend more time talking about Michigan football than my fiance and the engagement, because I think it was a beautiful moment. But that Michigan game was frustrating for sure.
Lovely photos. I'm honored that you told me about it before you told Pina. Who had to find out on Twitter, like the rest of the normal people in the world, unlike me, who knew a long time before everyone else as one of your closest friends. I appreciate that, Chris. We did get an email. This one came in from Sean Elliott. I don't think it's San Antonio Spurs, Sean Elliott, but Sean Elliott wrote in, "Yo, just adding to what I'm sure is already a long list of people congratulating Chris on his engagement. I know Michigan lost, but I'm sure this makes up for it and more. I don't care what Daryl Swenson thinks. Spend some time on the podcast congratulating this man." We actually got in a follow-up email from Daryl Swenson with an all caps LOL. I love your guys.
Did
show.
We? So
shout out
to him starting the year right.
Out to Daryl.
Him not being a bad sport about it, because we obviously appreciate the emails from everybody.
Yeah, of course,
included.
Man. Shout out to Daryl. Did it make up for it, Chris? Did the engagement make up for the Michigan loss or no?
Yes. And it's going to sting for a while, because, I mean, if you watch the game, Michigan had essentially two drives from inside the 3-yard line that didn't result in any points, including the first one of the game, where they tried a double reverse pass on a fourth down from like the 2. And it was just like, what are you doing? And then they also threw two pick sixes. So when you factor in that they either gave away 14 points and then, you know, lost 14 points of their own, or at least six in a game where they lost by six, it's infuriating. But what I'll say is that I've noticed that my fiance doesn't understand my affinity for Michigan football. To her, she thinks every, because of the way I describe these games, she thinks every game is like, you know, the end of the world if they lose. And it I mean, look, they play, let's see, they play Ohio State once every year. They play Michigan State once every year, which, given that rivalry and the way it's gone for like the last 10, 15 years, matters a lot more than it usually does as of right now. They play, you know, a lot of the weekends that we've hung out because we're long distance, they're playing like Penn State, Michigan State. Like, these are like holiday weekends or like weekends that we plan to hang out. The Ohio State game was during Thanksgiving. And then my birthday falls on the weekend of the Big Ten title game. So I was telling her, like, it's not that every game matters this much, but once you get to a certain stage and you're undefeated, they all matter a lot. And so when they beat Ohio State and they win the Big Ten title game, and I said, those games matter a lot, and then you play in the playoff and you lose, she's like, okay, but like, they won all these other games. I'm like, yeah, but this one knocked them out. What I'll say is that her being around, or her having been with me for these losses, mellows me out in a way where it's like, I do realize it's not the end of the world, but damn if it doesn't feel that way sometimes. The Georgia game last year was like a blowout loss, and it made it a lot easier. It's like, okay, we had New Year's Eve dinner reservations last year. This makes it way easier to just leave and not worry about what the score is. This one was brutal in the exact opposite way, because they absolutely had a chance to win. They were favored, and you know, and it was close. And so, you know, but still, it absolutely takes some of the just raw nature of the loss, and dulls it some, because it's like, I've got a fiance now, and I'm really, really excited about that process. I'm excited to be moving back to New York, and
I'm excited to give a speech at your wedding. At least she's learning early just how much of a Michigan sicko you are, and she will be prepared for a lifetime of you caring deeply about the Wolverines. Chris, on today's show, first of all, I just want to shout out our listeners. I know we finished the end of 22 on a weird schedule there. Obviously, people are traveling. Chris has these amazing things going on in his personal life. I was traveling, so apologies for kind of the up and down schedule. We're back. We're here. And I thought, what better way to start the new year than kind of take a big picture look at the league? I did a contender ranking for SI last week, Chris, and I'm already regretting some of my decisions. Within a week, so much has changed. And I have no idea how to handicap who's going to win the title this season. I really don't. I think my number two might be my number one now. I think my number nine on this list is now off the list entirely. I'm going to run you my list, okay? And you either say pause, or you want to discuss a team. You can wait until after I read the whole list and we can discuss it in its entirety. But this was how I ranked contenders on December 30th, okay?
Mm-hmm.
At 11, I have 11 teams that I think could actually win the title this
year. Isn't that a crazy number, by
the
way?
It's crazy. It's crazy. And I think it's down to 10.
Almost half the league.
Yeah.
Okay.
At number 11, I put the Cavaliers. At 10, I put the Pelicans. This is where it gets dicey. At 9, I put the Suns.
Ooh.
At 8, I put the Grizzlies. At 7, the 76ers. At 6, the Warriors. 5, the Nuggets. 4, the Clippers. 3, Bucks. 2, Nets. 1, Celtics.
Okay. I didn't want to pause you there at all, just because I think it's useful for everybody to hear the whole list. I mean, look, I don't think the list of teams is crazy, although I'm side-eyeing Phoenix right now. And obviously they're banged up and Booker's out.
I have a story to tell about Phoenix, by the way.
Okay.
So,
all right, Biggie, go ahead. Look at Chris having the cultural references.
Yeah, there we go.
Starting off the new year right.
So normally I don't really like to talk about my reporting trips until they're done, okay? It's just kind of a superstitious thing. I don't know what's going to happen here, but I was recently in Phoenix to work on a story, okay? I don't know when the story's going to come out, because they've been on a massive slide. you know, I had a chance to speak with Devin Booker for a few minutes after his 58-point game. He's played like 3 minutes since then. But our listeners can't see this, obviously. I'm wearing a purple LA Dodgers hat currently while we do this podcast. I'm in Phoenix, and it's a last-minute trip, and I have to go to Phoenix, and I have to go to New York. And I'm in Phoenix, and I have not had a chance to get my hair cut yet. So I need to buy a hat. And I go to a local Urban Outfitters in Phoenix, and I buy this Dodgers hat. I wear it to the game. I'm in the pregame press conference. I start to ask Monty Williams a question in the pregame press conference, and Monty Williams, staring right at me, goes, "I know you're not wearing a Los Angeles hat right now." And I'm like, "Uh-oh." I was like, it was an oversight. I didn't mean to. And Monty Williams, still staring right at me, goes, "That's an excuse." And now I'm just terrified.
Hey, he put you in DeAndre Ayton territory at this point.
He was not happy, Chris. He was not happy. And
that's
I was
a very
like,
serious man right there.
And I was like, "I legitimately apologize." And he was like, "Apology accepted." I've not been scolded like that in a long time. I was terrified. So much so that at halftime, I went to the Suns team store, bought a new hat. But now I don't want to show up to the press conference wearing a Suns hat.
So
Now I'm wearing a backward black Suns hat in the post-game press conference.
A comedy of hat purchase errors, sir.
Yeah. And Monty Williams after the game is like, "I'm glad you turned your hat around." And I was like, "I actually bought a new one." And he was like, "That's even better." So shout out to Monty Williams straight up yelling at me. But dude, I think I got to take the Suns off this list. Let's start there. Do you see a world in which the Phoenix Suns could still win the NBA championship?
Okay, here. Yeah, but how if you look at like ESPN's standings for these different things and they give like the probabilities, and when a team is essentially eliminated but not quite, they get the 0.1 chance of, you know, 1% chance, the 0.1% chance. I'm going to put Phoenix there. One, their record could easily drop to, well, I haven't looked at their upcoming schedule lately, but their they're 3 games over 500 right now. They'll have a chance to build that back up. But also, you know, they've been kind of impressively, up until recently, had been impressively, I would say, overachieving given their injuries, given all the offseason stuff. And maybe the most polite way to put this, because I've been so impressed with how they've managed to stay afloat, and even not stay afloat, but like kind of thrive in the midst of the Sarver stuff and the questions about Ayton and Monty Williams. Booker has just been chugging along, and now he's out. Chris Paul is not playing to his normal standards, which, by the way, he's of an age now where like you can't expect him to do that anymore. It's a team that's deep, but it's a team that for the first time we're seeing have real injuries. It was a team that was healthy for the better part of the last 3 seasons that all of a sudden is not healthy. So it makes total sense that some of these things are going to fall apart. I think that they'll rebound a little bit, but I have many, if not all, of the same questions that I had after the way they folded last year in Game 7. So I don't, you know, I came into the season not expecting them to win the title. I came in expecting that they would maybe still finish as a home court advantage team, but that is it, you know, in risk right now too. So I didn't expect them to win the title this year to begin with. And I feel more confident that they probably won't now. So do they have a chance? Yes. Is it slim as hell? Yes. And stuff will change once they get healthy a little bit, but I still think that there are flaws with this team.
Yeah. I mean, for whatever reason, I can't quit them. You know, they've been really good with Devin Booker this year. Devin Booker is now the best player on that team. I think he doesn't get talked enough about as a number one guy on a great team. And they've been a great team when he's been healthy. You know, the Warriors are on this win streak. They could have easily gone into a tailspin without Steph Curry, and we'd be talking about them like we're talking about the Suns potentially. But I'm not saying Devin Booker is Steph Curry, obviously, but I do think, you know, the way people talked about him early in his career, I think still colors some of the Devin Booker analysis. And I think it's just going to come down to his health. I'm with you. I think their chances are very slim. I think they're going to need to make a couple moves. I think they will make a couple moves, but it's really not looking good right now. Let's talk about the team that I had number 11, because I put the Cavs and Pelicans at 11 and 10. And my reasoning was, I think they're great teams. I think they're a year away. I think they both need a deep playoff run together before I can say they're capable of winning a ring. I need to see how both teams work in the playoffs, especially defensively, before I'm ready to say they can definitely win a championship. I think they have a chance right now if they get the right breaks and injuries, etc. But Donovan Mitchell goes off for 71, and it's just comical. And I know that I wouldn't say the scoring numbers are inflated. We're just at a time in the league where teams are shooting more threes than ever, pace is high, etc. Offense is better than ever before. But 71 is 71, no matter how you get it. It was an incredible performance. I mean, his pull-up three, when he's hitting that, there's nothing you can do. I wrote today, it would have been harder for the Cavs to fill their specific need better than what they did this summer when they were like, we need someone else who can take the pressure off Darius Garland, who can go get us buckets late in the game, who can run pick and rolls, who can create. Obviously, every team needs that guy, but when you're an already good team, it's hard to make a move like that that doesn't ruin your rotation. It's just a home run move on so many levels. But yeah, I had the Cavs at number 11. They've been good. I mean, top 10 defense, top 10 offense. One of very few teams in the league that have that distinction. Do you put them closer to the Nets, Celtics, Bucks category, or do you think they need some more seasoning?
I think they need more seasoning, but here's the thing. The numbers don't show that. To some extent, the experience doesn't show that, because you've had some guys that have been involved in playoff series before. Jared Allen is right there, and obviously you've got Mitchell, who has been mm-hmm. in the playoffs Kevin and Love, out of the first round. You've got Kevin Love, who's won a championship. So it's strange. I am of the opinion that teams that this iteration of this team hasn't been to the playoffs before, it's hard for me to believe that they'll go out and make the finals, make the East finals. But I mean, where are they right now in terms of net ranking? They've got to be, I know they were one as recently as like a week or two ago, and they've continued to win. So I imagine they're still right there. Net rating, they're right behind Cleveland. They're right behind Boston in net rating right now. But then there's a pretty decent gap between them, Brooklyn and New Orleans. So they're number two in net rating, and they're right there in terms of the standings, in terms of the net rating. So this is real. Not to mention that their defense, which is what I had the most questions about, with Darius Garland and 2 6-foot-1 guards in your starting lineup, albeit all stars, but 2 6-foot-1 guards, who aren't known for their defensive ability. If anything, are known that they're not really good defensively, and you've got the top defense in basketball. So this is absolutely a contender, whether you want to think that they don't have enough experience or not. They're absolutely capable. If you have Donovan Mitchell and Darius Garland on your team, and then you've got two people that are as good defensively as they are offensively, you absolutely have a chance. I do think that their depth on some level is going to be tested a little bit. I do think that the question that I had going into the season is still going to be one that's relevant, which is, who do you use to guard the Giannises of the league? Which, you know, every team has that question on some level, but the Cavs don't have like one clear guy that's just their three. They're small forward, really, in a lineup where you've got two all-star guards and two potential all-star bigs. They could potentially trade for somebody. They're going to get Ricky Rubio back pretty soon as well, which helps their depth, especially in a grouping where you were trying to stagger Garland and Mitchell. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, there's a lot of good things to come here. Also, if you're worried about the team maybe not having enough experience, the more they play together, the better. And the more opportunities they get to kind of just gel this roster, the better. So it's a scary team. I would not want to play them, but I also think that on some level, you're not afraid of them if you're Boston. You're not afraid of them if you're Milwaukee necessarily. I think because of the fact that it's a team that, you know, you've been there, you've done that to some extent now. Cleveland is the new kid on the block, so to speak, but there's a whole lot of metrics there to suggest that this is absolutely a contender. There's a whole lot of metrics to suggest that they're too low on your list, even if I do think they've got some questions to answer still.
Man, the league's been so fun this year. It's been so fun this year. I'm thinking as you're talking, I'm thinking of the questions I want to ask you. Like I didn't run down with Chris exactly what I was going to ask him today, and I'm like, I'm excited to hear Chris's opinion on this because it's all over the place. I'm with you. I think Mitchell is so good, but yes, I think they still need that swing piece. Like their starting five is still a little wonky, and they're still searching for that fifth guy, I think, who makes sense. Mitchell, I think, has been competing harder defensively this year. We still need to see it in the playoffs. And yeah, I'm with you. I think the right way to characterize it is I don't think Boston, Brooklyn, Milwaukee are necessarily scared of them, but they're not going to be an easy out, certainly. I want to switch to the West for a second because this thought hit me. I mean, another guy who's been on an absolute heater recently is Luka Doncic.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's just nothing left to say about him. He's incredible. Every night he's worth watching. I didn't put the Mavericks on my list. I think they've won 7 games in a row. They're now in 4th place in the Western Conference. The Mavs are 9th in net rating. They have the 6th best offense in the NBA. You know, average defensively. Do you think they deserve to be on the contender list? What do you make of the Mavs? Because we actually got... Let me actually loop in this email we got. We got this from Ben Steiger, who wrote in late last year. I'm just coming off watching the preposterous Luka performance put on my Knicks last night. Don't really know what there's to say about this man. I'll put aside my concerns about Tibbs' stubbornness in setting rotations and ask this. Wouldn't it behoove the Mavericks brass to move heaven and earth to get a better team around Luka? Having Christian Wood as your second best player isn't going to get you anywhere. They have been good with Christian Wood in the starting lineup. I believe 7-3 or something along those lines since he moved in. I think I saw our guy, Dan Devine, tweeting about it this morning. But yeah, I'm just throwing all this Mavs stuff on you, Chris. What do you make of it? Are they currently a contender? I'm with Ben, but I don't even know what moves are really realistic for them out there.
In a normal situation, I would say no, I don't think they are. I just think it's a little bit... I'm also probably a little salty for having said that I thought that they would beat the Warriors going into that series and laying out a whole list of reasons why. But I feel like you have to include them, if not on your list, then just kind of like in the back of your mind, because the West isn't like a runaway for anybody. Mm. And because of that, you know, if your thought last year was that, oh, the Warriors are so great that, you know, that they're going to run through the league this year, obviously not. And, you know, the Suns aren't there. There are teams that make sense out of the West, but none of them is infallible. So I think Luka is just so great that because of that, he could overcome any one of those teams on his own. I also don't like the idea of having to rely on him or any one player in the league to have to do that. So I would still say it's very, very unlikely with this group. I'm still kind of blown away that they let Jalen Brunson walk, because it was very clear that Luka was kind of on this ascent. And I think that you increase the odds that he can stay healthy if you at least have someone else that, in addition to Dinwiddie and everybody else on that roster, that you can kind of depend on with the ball as opposed to just Luka. But, you know, we're watching Luka deal with it, and we're watching Luka thrive this way, and we're watching them now catch a hot streak. I just worry a little bit about, you know, how much you're depending on Luka and then an array of shooters and really few other guys to really break down defenses. Not to mention that so far their defense has been average, whereas last year they were much better than average.
Right.
So that's my fear here with this team. So I would lean more toward no, but again, the nature of the Western Conference won't allow me to count them out, or count Luka out, really, is what I guess is probably more accurate to say.
Yeah, it's crazy because there's all this talk. I mean, to Ben's email, how do you not move heaven and earth to get better pieces around Luka? I think obviously it's like you don't want to lose a guy like Jalen Brunson, but Luka's a paradox because do you ever want to take the ball out of his hands? That seems silly. He's probably the best manipulator in the NBA right now.
Sure.
On the other hand, that style of play just typically does not work in the playoffs. The high usage, super, super high usage, one guy, we just have not seen it work. And yeah, I'm struggling even to think who are the right pieces to put around Luka Doncic, you know?
I think we're still figuring that out, yeah. Honestly.
And Wood is a fantastic pick and roll partner, and he's been very good. I don't know that Christian Wood, to Ben's point, is the second best player on a title team. That's really the question I have, is I don't know who the best guy to put around Luka is, and I think that's a very open question. And yeah, that was the reason I left them off. It's nothing about. I think Luka has proven he can win you a playoff series or two. If you're the bad matchup for him, he will just dominate. He will take over the game and he will completely manipulate the flow of what's happening on the court. But I think there's just a limit on how far that can go. You mentioned the West is wide open. I'm going to put you on the spot a bit here. This is a tough question because I had an incredibly difficult time separating these teams. I think if I had to pick, my favorites are coming out of the East right now. But among this group, either rank them 1 to 4 or tell me who you like the best out of this group.
All right.
The Clippers, the Nuggets, the Warriors, and the Grizzlies.
I'm going to go Grizzlies here.
I had them lowest on my list.
I know you had them 8th, and I said I was going to let you run all the way through your list so that people could hear all 11 of the teams, but I was kind of surprised that you had them that low.
Can I give a quick explanation for that?
Sure.
I thought that Christmas Day game, I'm not trying to read too much into one regular season game, especially the Warriors without Steph, but that was an impressive punk job by the Warriors. I got to say, I love how brash the Grizzlies are. I love how they don't care about going at the Warriors. But I also love when the veteran team is like, hold on just a minute. You know,
Draymond. Not the WWF. That's exactly what it sounds like.
And, you know, Draymond barking at guys on the floor. Klay Thompson taunting Dylan Brooks. The Grizzlies. Grizzlies Nation, I don't know what they call themselves. They're in shambles. They're like, Klay is a weirdo for saying that this was a rivalry. And, oh, my God, the refs let Klay shoot. Listen, you got punked on Christmas Day. You talked a lot of smack, and it happens. And, listen, another thing is they've had a lot of weird shooting games this year. They're hitting, like, 4 threes. And if Desmond Bane is not hitting threes, who are the shooters you're counting on in a playoff series? Is Conchar going to play that much? Is Aldama going to play that much? Like, there's an on-the-court worry there, too, where I'm a little dubious of their shooting. Mm-hmm. Is David Roddy going to get minutes in the playoffs? I'm not sure. So that was kind of my hesitation, and maybe I was feeling myself a little bit coming out of that Christmas game, but I have a little bit of a hesitation with the Grizzlies, so I'm interested to hear why you're high on them.
Sure. Okay. So let me go through it. One, I'm going to give Bane more time. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously he hasn't been healthy the whole year, which to me that makes them more impressive. That up until what was it, a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, that you know their big three, if you want to call it that, had played together at all. Right. So the fact that they are a half game out as we're recording this, a first place behind the Nuggets, despite not having had their trio really together much at all, one of whom is a shooter. And so, you know, it would make sense that he might need some time to develop more rhythm. I'm looking at Tankathon right now, which is a weird sight to be looking at when you're talking about the Grizzlies. But I'm looking at the remaining strength of schedule. They have the fourth easiest schedule left in the league. The only team in the West that has an easier schedule remaining is Sacramento. Their strength of schedule is 487. Memphis's is 488. So they're going to have an opportunity to rack up some pretty, you know, a pretty easy remaining schedule. New Orleans is also right there with them as far as how easy their remaining schedule is. So I think both them and I think New Orleans, for that matter, both have a chance to really – if and when they get fully healthy, if and when they develop rhythm. By the way, Brandon Ingram has not played in a really, 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 really long time. Yeah. And as we look at the standings and you look at, like, to me, my main question about New Orleans at this point is just, like, can he, Ingram, and Zion develop a rhythm that they really haven't had a chance to develop yet?
Zion's been incredible, but it's a good point. Without Ingram is significant.
Yeah, I mean, Ingram has played 15 games out of the, how many have they played? 30, somewhere around 35 at this point. Yeah. You know, most teams have played about 35 games. So that's actually my bigger question about them. But Memphis, you know, Memphis has now been deep in the playoffs. They're kind of the opposite of what I've said about Cleveland, where it's like, okay, their cast of guys is actually scary. Their top flight guys are scary. But they do have the experience that a team like Cleveland doesn't, at least collectively. And who knows? Maybe they push Golden State even more if they have Ja. Last year, probably do, if he's healthy and he plays out that series in which they took the Warriors to six. So I feel pretty good about them. I think that they're, as of right now, a more complete team than Golden State is because of the way their bench is constructed and who they let go in free agency. Doesn't mean Golden State can't develop. It doesn't mean that, or, you know, that they're bench guys. It doesn't mean that Denver can't go out and get pieces that help them more defensively. And it doesn't mean that, that Kawhi Leonard won't start to put it together and look like Kawhi Leonard, which he has lately. So it's not me saying that I don't believe in the other teams. It's me saying that I think the Grizzlies have more room to grow, to develop, to gel with their top flight guys. And if they stay healthy, or if they can, be healthy for that run, I think that this just might be the Grizzlies' time. And I really do feel strongly about that.
Wow. So you'd have the Grizzlies as your current favorite in the West.
I would.
Wow. What do you make of the Warriors? Last night, Klay Thompson goes off for 54 points. I touched on him again in a small piece I wrote for SI today, which they've won five in a row. Granted, all have been at home. But that's the longest win streak they've had all season, and all five games have been without Steph Curry. They look like, you wrote about this, I mean, they were in potential going for a massive tailspin here, Chris. Mm-hmm. They've been terrible without Steph this year. They're always bad without Steph. This year was particularly bad. They've won five in a row. They're at home, but Portland's not a cupcake. Utah's not a cupcake. Atlanta's not an easy win. Memphis, again, on Christmas Day, that was the start of the streak. Those were all really solid wins. They're finding ways to win without Steph. I think they found something in DiVincenzo. I think Moody's playing better. Ty Jerome, I'm not sure if that's going to translate to the playoffs, but I Steph, Clay, and Dre have not lost healthy in a playoff series since the 2016 finals, which is the only time they've lost, and it took like a truly absurd set of circumstances for that to happen. Where do you have them in this race? Do you like them more or less than teams like the Nuggets and the Clippers?
I'll say for now, if they're fully healthy, I kind of trust them to find a way to beat Denver. Just doesn't. We've talked about this a little bit, and it's like people, I feel like the Venn diagram of people that don't like Jokic and think that he's overrated or overbilled or whatever you would call it are also the same people that mostly watch him in a playoff series against Golden State.
Yeah.
Where it's like, yeah, he looks somewhat deficient defensively when he's having to try to figure out how to guard or how to try to, get up to the level of where Steph Curry is, which is like 80 feet away. That matchup for Denver is just not particularly great. I mean, it would be fun to watch that series now when you've got Michael Porter and obviously Jamal Murray, but I don't love that matchup for the reasons that we saw last year, which is just that Steph is going to annihilate that defense, at least as constructed. The Clippers would be a fascinating matchup for them.
Yeah. They've beaten them once.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a fascinating match to watch the Clippers against the Warriors or the Nuggets, quite frankly. But
yeah, sorry, that's what I meant, the Nuggets, yes.
Yeah, so I'm a little bit torn on that one. I also want to see the Clippers, like, are they fully healthy when they take on that matchup? Are they down one guy? As we talk about Kawhi and his health, I'm pretty sure PG is now out for a little bit,
too. Yeah, hamstring injury, yep.
So it's just, on some level, the Clippers are tough just because I feel like they just have a little bit of the feel of a team that I remember watching the Bulls for so many of those years, with Derrick Rose and everything. And they had their starting lineup was something like 25-3, when they were fully healthy. But that also tells you that their starting lineup was only healthy 28 games. Right. So they were dominant when they were healthy, but they were never healthy. And it's starting to feel like the Clippers are kind of that team. A little bit. Maybe it's even conservative to say starting to feel that way, because obviously the last couple of years have been the last couple of years. But between that and their rotation, Yeah, they have the potential to be dominant if they're ever fully healthy, but will they ever fully be healthy? And it kind of does feel like that seesaw effect. So I don't know what to think of them other than, no, I really wouldn't want to play them if they're fully healthy. It's just a question of whether they will be. But I trust the Warriors more than the Nuggets. If Steph is available, I'd like to say I trust them a little bit more than the Clippers, too, if Steph is fully healthy. Just because I don't really trust the Clippers to be fully healthy. But I would take the Grizzlies over all three of those other teams. I would.
Wow. Yeah, damn. Okay. I don't know that I was expecting that. I'm starting to talk myself back into the Nuggets. We got asked for our 2023 bold predictions, and I always pick the Nuggets to win the finals. But I'm feeling better about this. In first place in the West, they've been on a tear lately. I think they finally lost to the Wolves last night. But, I mean, Jokic, I think at some point we're going to have to talk about him possibly winning his third straight MVP.
Yeah, should have started at this point. Absolutely. Yeah,
he's been fantastic. The defense with Michael Porter Jr. in the starting lineup has actually been pretty good. And I think they'll probably never have a great defense. But can they get stops when it matters? I think they can get enough stops when it matters. And more importantly, can other teams stop them when it matters? And I don't know. The Heat were playing a great game against the Clippers, and that was getting close in the final few minutes. And, you know, Miami's Bam Adebayo, Jimmy Butler, Kyle Lowry. No answers. None. I think Bam can guard every single player in the NBA one-on-one, credibly. That doesn't mean he's going to stop him every time. I think he can credibly guard players one-on-one in the NBA. I think the only one he can't is Jokic. At some point, I'm also like, if Jokic is as good as we think he is, and I think we both think he's very good, he's got to break through. And at the same time, I mean, I put the Clippers over them because I think Kawhi is really starting to look like Kawhi. But, you know, you mentioned the health. Kawhi gets sick. He misses the game last night against Miami. Now Paul George has this hamstring injury. Maybe they are just snake bitten, but it's just so hard for me to separate these teams. I still think the promise of the Clippers is maybe higher than the promise of all the other teams in the West.
Sure.
As presently constructed. You know, if Golden State makes a move, if they get a vet or two, it could be different. But, God, it's so hard to separate them. I do want to talk about one team that we've not talked about in a long time on this podcast that is now by far the hottest team in the NBA. 16-1 in their last 17.
Yeah.
12 wins in a row. Kevin Durant is Kevin Durant. I mean, he's playing like the Kevin Durant we know and love. You know, it's funny. I had Kevin Arnovitz on the pod a couple weeks ago, Chris, and we talked about how, you know, he's watching the NBA as a casual fan, and it's not always a great product. Stars are missing time, and you get excited for a big matchup, and you find out somebody's missing. You know who cares about the regular season? Kevin Durant. This guy competes every night. I love the competitiveness he has, and I mean that, like, he's drawing with guys, he's drawing with fans, but in a way that's just clear that he just loves the game, man. Like, he's genuinely so thrilled to be out there. It's just hard to explain. It's hard to translate it, but like competitiveness is not the right sell, but he just brings like a great, I'm really happy to be out here attitude every single night. And I'm going to make the most of it. Like, I'm going to enjoy every minute I have on the floor is kind of the way I see him playing. And listen, they've been a juggernaut. Ben Simmons is being the role player everyone wanted him to be in terms of a defender distributor. Nick Claxton, I wrote about Brooke Lopez and what he's doing protecting the paint.
Claxton's right there too.
Claxton's right there. It's at least statistically. Royce O'Neal, I think they've gotten good minutes from TJ Warren, Yuta. I mean, all these guys coming off the bench. Patty Mills. What do you make of it? I think the Nets are a better team than the Bucks right now. Milwaukee's dropped to 22nd, I think, in offense. I don't know if that's just all Chris Middleton, but I'm starting to worry about them. I know you are the chief operating officer, the number one hype man, the Ooh. Communications director of the Giannis is the best player.
I had that one coming. I was, if you hadn't said that, I was going to bring it up myself because it has not been a good 2-3 weeks for that. Compared, at least not when Durant is playing the way he's playing and the Nets are playing the way they're playing.
So,
absolutely.
So give me a vibe check right now. Are you more confident in the Nets or Bucks at this present moment?
I'm gonna go with the Bucks, like for a little bit longer, bit longer, because Chris Middleton and not just him, but the offense as a whole. Because sometimes you could have a player that's struggling and the offense still can do well, because just having that player, his presence, his spacing, his threat can add to your offense. And Milwaukee has not had that yet or benefited from that yet. Middleton has shot really, really, really poorly, to an extent where it's like, I don't think he's capable of shooting this poorly for much longer. I do believe a little bit more in the Bucks defense when it comes down to it than the Nets. Although the Nets are a top 10 defense at this point, they've played well for long enough to be legitimate. They've won, as you said, 16 out of 17, 12 in a row. I mean, they have two guys that, like, it wouldn't be the craziest thing in the world if they ended up going 50, 40, 90.
Yeah.
I mean, Kyrie's right there. You know, is it basically 50% shooting, 38% from three? He's already at 90%. Durant, it would take him a little bit. It would take a big heater from him from the 3-point line to get there. But he's shooting 56% from the field. He's averaging almost 30 a game on less than 19 shots.
And his defense has been fantastic. I mean, defensively, for them to go to where they were to start the season to top 10 defensively is.
Yeah. We need to be having more conversations about him in the MVP conversation. Yeah. I think even more so. And I'm saying this granted because they're on a long winning streak, but also that their defense is legitimate, that Durant probably, especially if there's voter fatigue as it relates to Jokic, that Durant needs to be the beneficiary of that, in my opinion. So, I mean, this team is real. I also think that the idea of the concern about will there be something else that happens with them, whether it is Ben Simmons in his back, whether it is Kevin Durant having an injury. He's stayed healthy all year. He's played in every game, I think, they've had so far, which is unusual. And also, you know, was always the main impetus for me saying clearly that Giannis was the best guy in the world. Durant can make that a very good case if he can stay healthy, obviously, and hold down the fort in a year where, frankly, he was kind of, well, let me not say he was dealt a bad hand of cards, because obviously Durant kind of put a question mark on the season too with everything that he said and did during the offseason. But this team is real, and they have just enough of a blend of everything from spacing and shooting to the fact that they do have some guys that are capable of really getting after it defensively. It's a good roster, and this is kind of what everybody thought and why so many people said going into the year, this team, you know, even if you hate the guys on the court because of the different off-court stuff that's going on, the trade demands, the vaccine stuff, the you know, potential anti-Semitism, the anti-Semitism, whatever you want to call it, not even whatever we want to call it, the stuff that very clearly looked like anti-Semitism for a while. You know, but this team is deep. This team has, you know, some great players on it, and also some stability now and not a question mark over hanging over them as far as the coach. So it's not terribly, terribly surprising, but it's refreshing to see them play well. Finally, there is a part of me that wants to see them prove it when it counts. They are coming off of a sweep. So we'll see. But I would take Milwaukee over them slightly right now. But I would also love to see a Milwaukee-Brooklyn series. I would love it. I would love to see the top four in the East really go after that. Even the top five, like if we throw a Philly in there too, Philly becomes very interesting. They didn't make your list, did they? In terms of the
they were number seven. They were
number seven. Okay, I forgot.
And listen, Embiid has been fantastic. Embiid and Harden together have been fantastic. The Harden reports about him maybe wanting to go back to Houston are a little weird to me. And you just wonder if he's going to be fully invested. But the fact that they've been this good without Tyrese Maxey has been great. to your point, I think the Nets and Celtics play each other on the 12th. I really hope everyone's healthy for that game. And also, yes, as you alluded to, we're focusing on the Nets on the court. They've, to their credit or however you want to describe it, they've quote unquote managed to avoid distractions. I mean, I don't know how you want to phrase it. Obviously, the Kyrie stuff is still out there or was out there, whatever. It was bad, but
yeah, I mean that stuff. And please, let's not have this conversation about a redemption or an adversity.
Yeah. Yes,
because
yes.
It was all
self-inflicted. Yeah.
So I don't want to hear anything about that. We can just call it what it is for the fact that the team is talented, was always really talented. Mm-hmm. They're playing up to their potential. They're healthy. To some extent, this is what we would have expected of them if you stripped away all the controversy that was self-inflicted. But also shows you, like, maybe if you just handed Jacques Vaughn the job to begin with.
Yeah.
And not ever considered Ime Udoka, not brought in Steve Nash, who'd never coached before. You know, but it's nice to see them playing the way that we all thought that they were capable of playing last year. Before a James Harden trade, now after a James Harden trade, the team has talent. There was never any question about that. It's been really cool to see them finally put it together and finally do it as a healthy squad.
And I'm very happy for Jacques Vaughn, who deserves this opportunity. And it's a difficult opportunity for coaches of color to get teams this good, frankly. And, you know, I think that it took a lot of public shaming of the Udoka potential hiring. And Jacques Vaughn, I think 22-7, he's been great. He's pushing all the right buttons, and especially the way he's coached up and coaxed out that defensive effort has been remarkable. I do have them number two in my contender rankings right now, and I stand by it. I like them more than the Bucks. I'm with you on the Middleton thing. I think that it's obviously playing a significant role right here, but I just have some questions about their half-court offense. And yeah, obviously Giannis is, the numbers are so good that it can sometimes obscure the fact of how much of a slog their offense is. And yeah, I mean, now Middleton's missed a lot of time, and I'm interested to see if he can get enough of rhythm and if he can stay healthy for the playoffs. Let's end with this, Chris. You know, it's our first episode of the new year. We've now seen nearly half a season's worth of evidence of who these teams are, where they are. Now, keep in mind, last year, Boston around this time was 500. They end up going on this big run. So things can change, although that's not typically the norm. What's your finals pick as of the start of the new year? Headed into 2023, I'm giving you an option. Who are you picking in the finals to win and against who?
You know, I think I kind of outed myself already. Is like, at this point, I'm probably taking Memphis. And so in the West, and granted, they haven't played really well lately, but I don't know that I'm taking anybody over Boston at this moment. I mean, granted, we just talked about Brooklyn looks much better and finally, you know, whole. No controversies hanging over them, at least for the time being, thank goodness. But I, you know, Boston did sweep them. And the two key guys were out there last year in Durant and Kyrie. So you can benefit from having other guys healthy and playing well, but it's still Boston. It's still the depth that Boston has. Mm-hmm. And by the way, Boston is still kind of, you know, if I'm going to give Memphis the benefit of the doubt in terms of not having all their guys out there, if I'm going to give them that benefit of the doubt, not having their guys out there for an extended amount of time to develop rhythm, Robert Williams had missed a lot of time and is still pretty new to being back in the mix, and kind of the way that changes the way they look as far as the way they play offense, as far as the way they play defense. So I'm still going to go with Boston here, I think, to get back to the finals. I would take the Grizzlies over anybody in the West right now. And so I would have a Boston-Memphis final for right now.
You won't do it, so I will. I'm going to be the prisoner of the moment. And I'm going to go with my Denver Nuggets. Shout out to the Joker. Shout out to borderline all-star, maybe all-star Aaron Gordon, Bruce Brown, KCP, Christian Brown, Braun, whatever you want to call him, my guy Michael Malone, my guy Calvin Booth. Shout out to the Denver Nuggets. They are going to win the NBA Finals against Kevin Durant and the Brooklyn Nets. That's right. I'm putting the Nets in the NBA Finals.
When you said prisoner of the moment, I figured that's who you were taking. Yeah.
I'm going to go full chaos. You want to talk about salty. I picked the Nets to beat the Celtics in the first round last year. And I said, you know what? I'm not picking against Kevin Durant. And so, you know, fool me once, shame on you. Is it going to be fool me twice or are they going to prove me right? We'll find out. Chris, that I think was going to do it for today's episode. Once again, congratulations, my brother. We're all so proud of you. Once again, I would like everyone to know that, A, we are feuding with Michael Pina. We are upset about the way he left the show, and I'm glad that you told me
about
it. I'm glad that you told me that you got engaged before he did.
Oh, man. Shout out to Michael. Just for when we get people, Reddit threads apparently that call out that we date Michael. Shout out to Michael, who you're having lunch with in like hours. Like, even better.
Minutes. That'll do it for today's episode. Everyone, please keep your emails coming. We definitely want to get to some more emails to kick off this year. Openfloormail@gmail.com. Thank you to everyone for bearing with the schedule. We're excited to be back on track here for the, you know, last 6 months of this NBA season. Until the next episode, continue to enjoy all the hoops. Whoa.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy and Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.